Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. A second PMQs where Jeremy Corbyn has gone after Theresa May on rising crime and seems to have hit his target. So is he actually making progress? I'm Fraser Nelson and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth to discuss. Now, James, we had a taster of this last time. It seems that he has got an attack line. Crime has gone up. You used to be Home Secretary. And her defence seems to be crime isn't going up.
He's also got another attack line, which is that you cut the police. And I think that one of the things that Labour took from the election campaign, and they did much better than anyone expected, is that their line about the police cuts making the country less safe resonated. And it has a kind of obvious, simple, kind of logical appeal to most people, which is, oh, there are fewer police, we must therefore be less safe.
Especially during the terrorist attacks. And the Tories got into huge trouble there, where they struggled to say, well, we haven't really cut the anti-terror police. That message didn't get across.
And I think what is becoming difficult is that when Theresa May was Home Secretary, you could make an argument that technology was making it easier to fight crime, that you didn't need as many police on the beat as you used to do because of that. Now, I think in the public consciousness, people think that technology is creating more crimes that need to be investigated.
Now, Katie, talking about technology, while Jeremy Corbyn was making that point about rising crime, Labour MPs were tweeting away these little graphics showing crime going up. So we're seeing a sort of new style of PMQs where the leader is attacking in the chamber and the MPs are joining the attack on social media.
Yeah, I think PMQs is definitely adapting to the modern age quite fast because ultimately most people don't sit down and watch a full hour of PMQs. Mm-hmm. I think the parties have tapped onto that. I think on both sides, I think Labour were particularly affected today, but therefore you see targeted tweeting and you also see this idea where although that Jeremy Corbyn is going on the attack for the full set of questions, the real money shot, so to speak, is looking for that clip, which is going to play out on the Facebook and is really going to be something that lots more people will see than who actually saw PMQs. I think last week we saw Emily Thornberry do it when she went for votes, for the 16-year-olds. Mm-hmm. That's something that would obviously go well on Facebook, but lots of the young members will just see, oh, that's Labour trying to get us so we have a say, and the Conservatives trying to stop us, but it doesn't matter because in 2 years' time, should the government last that long, I can vote and I'll vote for Labour. And I think today you saw Jeremy Corbyn again trying to get that point. But I think where he stuttered was when he at one point he said, I'm very clear that crime is wrong, which I think suggested that he had something that he needed to be clear on.
Do you think he meant to say that crime is rising, James? I mean, because this is... I was struck by her
defence. I think he was trying to say that he was not soft on crime. But obviously, you never repeat your opponent's charge. I mean, he was trying... It was a very odd clarification.
I don't think they'll clip that one.
Yeah. but she still is in a bit of a sticky wicket if all she can say is... She points to the survey's crime, and this crime survey suggests it's at a record low. But if that's her defence, that doing a sort of Nelson-Iceno ships kind of thing, I see no rising crime, I'm not sure that's going to work. And also, strikingly, Jeremy Corbyn didn't go on Brexit. Brexit's a mess, but he figured this issue of crime would hit home, and he's probably right.
Yeah, I think also you can tell that normally when a Home Office matter comes up at PMQs, Theresa May is happy to talk about it until the cows come home. Today, she tried to shift the debate to what Labour would do for the economy. This is a problem. I mean, there is also... I think you also get the sense that public concern about crime is on the rise. People, Tories ahead of the local elections in May in London, are saying that crime is coming up unprompted on the doorstep. One Tory councillor said to me this week that if it wasn't for the fact that if the mayor of London was a Tory, they would be completely stuffed. But they are trying to suggest to voters that Sadiq Khan is at fault. But they say that you are getting back to kind of old-fashioned public concern about crime and particularly knife crime.
Now, Katie, nobody mentioned Brexit today, perhaps because they knew that 11 cabinet members would, right after PMQs, be on their way to the first of two crunch Brexit meetings. Today they're discussing immigration and the Irish border. Do we expect anything to come from these meetings?
I think we're expecting it to be a little bit like in the past, where there's a bit of a hoo-ha and then not actually that much is achieved or decided on. I think at PMQs it was interesting that... Well, it was kind of expected, but the fact that Jeremy Corbyn couldn't really go on the attack, ahead of this crunch meeting, which there's so much pressure on the government to come to a decision, it was left to, a few Tory Eurosceptic MPs to put pressure on the Prime Minister. Told you a lot. Today they're talking about the Irish border and tomorrow they're talking about trade, but obviously their position on the Irish border tells you a lot about what they're going to be able to do on trade. And it was Hilary Benn at PMQs who kind of put to the Prime Minister that if she does side with the probably the harder Brexiteers in her party and doesn't really go for a customs union, the customs union or a customs arrangement, it's hard to see how that is compatible with what they've already agreed on the Irish border.
Now, James, you were the first journalist to reveal that the Cabinet had never had a substantial discussion about Brexit. I don't know how many months ago that was now.
It was in October. I suggested that she should take the whole Cabinet away to Chequers and kind of lock them in there until they come to an agreed position.
Well, she's taking her time in following your advice. I mean, do you expect today's meeting and tomorrow's meeting to do the trick, or do you think she'll just try to defer it again like she did last time?
So we know that there are 9 issues where the Brexit in a Cabinet is meant to settle the UK's negotiating position. They've done 2 of them, security and data. They're meant to be doing 2 today and then 2 more on Thursday. So that still leaves 3 issues outstanding. I also think the other question, which is this, which is the thing I'm most looking forward to trying to find out later on today, is whether the Cabinet are just discussing the opening UK negotiating position or how the UK will respond if the other side responds by saying, no, that won't work. You know, and that's because, weirdly enough, I can see how you could keep the government together over the opening position. It's much more difficult how you keep it together over what the position is after the EU has said, OK, well, we'll accept this bit, but we can't accept that bit. You need to move a little bit more here. I think the other question as well is the EU are watching what is going on here. And you see the Irish now are pushing for a legal text that sums up, as Katie said, what was agreed in December. Mm. How that text is written is going to be a big question, because the use of the word alignment was presented in a very different way in Brussels to the way it was presented back home. You know, I know that several cabinet Brexiteers sought assurances and were basically told alignment means equivalence. It doesn't mean exactly, it doesn't mean do, it, it is an example of trying to do the same thing, but you can do it in slightly different ways. Whereas on the EU side, they talked about alignment as meaning the exact same regulations.
So we're now into the politics of very important semantics here. And still there's questions as to her ruling out a customs union might be replaced by a customs arrangement or whatnot. But Katie, we had Greg Hands being sent out by the government too. He's had a rather rough time this morning, hasn't he?
Yeah, and you can see the interview in full on Steerpike. But Greg Hands was sent out to try and calm concerns at quite a tense time in the party, but in the end just having a nightmare interview, basically, where Andrew Neil repeatedly tried to ascertain what the government's position was on a variety of things, but particularly this report today, which is the idea that the EU would do punishment sanctions on the UK mm-hmm. in a transition period if they were to disagree on things. And if the ECJ didn't have time to rule, they'd just, you know, be like, well, you can't have access to this. And Hans would just not, he's a trade minister, and he would just not say whether, you know, the British government opposed this, was for it. And it just made it, I think, had he picked a side and explained it, it would be much better. It just made it the government seem quite incompetent.
James, Greg Hands was saying, I suppose perhaps fairly, that he's not going to decide British government policy when he's on the television studio. He also said
that reveals there isn't a British government policy if he's still going to decide it in the television studio.
Yeah, well, I think that everybody knows that there isn't one. But anyway, but what I'm trying to work out is how much does it actually hurt the government? Because the Tories are ahead of Labour in the polls, won the poll by The Guardian yesterday. So perhaps voters have factored in there's going to be lots of indecision. Perhaps however embarrassing it looks in Westminster, the voters think, well, we expected it to be chaotic because we disregarded the advice of the government, of the opposition, of the trade unions, of the employers. We voted Brexit partly to send you guys into chaos, and this is kind of what we expect.
I think it's hurting the UK in 2 ways. First of all, the certainty factor. You know, the UK wants this transition agreed in March. The more the UK can't decide whether it can live with this, what the EU said yesterday or not, the more in doubt getting agreement by March is. The second way the lack of a UK policy on the end state is hurting, so not the transition on the end state, is that you look at the warm noises being made by EU governments saying basically that they want a decent deal for the UK. But, you know, that there's far less talk of punishment now. You've got the Belgians, the Italians, the Spanish, the Dutch, all talking about kind of constructive solutions. Because the UK doesn't know what it wants, it can't go on a kind of diplomatic mission to try and boost support for this in European capitals. It can't turn up and say, here's our proposal on financial services, Mr. Gentiloni, why don't you support that? And so you've just got left people saying, oh, look, that we should include financial services in the deal. But they can't talk about the specifics of doing that because the UK haven't done that yet.
I think when you look at the polls, though, and why the Conservatives aren't further behind on issues like Brexit, it's partly because it's why Jeremy Corbyn wouldn't bring up Brexit today. It's because no one's looking at the Conservatives and going, oh, Labour, that's Sen Lemon, they know what they want, because the Labour position is completely confusing and it uses all these similar words in perhaps a more deliberately misleading way by saying, oh, well, we don't want to be in the customs union, but we want exactly the same, otherwise we won't be happy. And they never explain why. And I think unless there's a better option, the British public aren't stupid. They're not going to say, oh, you know, Jeremy Corbyn to Brussels.
Well, the Cabinet Brexit talks are going to be private, which means we hope to bring you the full details of them in tomorrow's Coffee House Shots podcast. Do join us for that. Or if you haven't signed up to the magazine, do try us. We've got a trial offer, £12 for 3 months of full access on the website, a print issue delivered to your door, and even a free Moleskine notebook worth £20. To avail yourself of this unbeatable value, go to spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Nick Hilton, who produced this podcast.